Hey everybody, Thurbleton here. This is a short episode that is really just me and a former host, just came on a few episodes, called Chav the World. He goes by Ballard now. But I had learned about some new developments with Grand Theft Auto Vice City, which is a pretty well-respected speedrunning game. And so I brought him on to talk a little bit about it, about the glitches in the game, and we'd go in a bit in depth about programming, a couple other things, but I figured it was a pretty good episode, and hope you guys like it. Welcome to another episode of the Scotchcast, or the Lincolncast. I'm not sure what we're naming this now. I think Scotchcast still. My name is Conrad Thurbleton Kirby, and joining with me today is a single guest, lovely guest, Brad Chav the World?
You can call me Chav the World if you still want. I don't mind. I changed my name recently. That's actually a funny story. I don't know if you want to hear it or not.
If you don't mind telling it, sure.
Yeah, sure. So, Chav the World has been my username since I was like 12, maybe even younger, maybe like 10.
I especially use it only because some listener, like you, appeared a bit on this podcast back when the Guild Wars 2 days, right?
Yeah, that's right, on the Lincolncast. I was there in the first episode. Woo! Way back when. Yeah, exciting times. I went back to Guild Wars recently. I don't know if you're still playing at all or not.
I've been trying to get back into it. It's looking, there's some cool stuff happening in there, definitely.
Yeah, it's amazing how much stuff they've done since I've been away. Like, I saw the whole Lion's Arch being destroyed. I was around for that, and that was kind of when I tailed off again. But the whole Living Story stuff, like, I missed so much stuff. They're doing, is it like bi-weekly content updates for the story until it ended for season one?
And since season one ended with the season two, they actually have a really neat thing where, like, even if you can't make it every 2 weeks, if you just log in and log back out, it'll, like, it archives it for you. You can come back later and, like, check it out.
That's neat. That's really cool. I missed a bunch of the lore and stuff with that. I was around, I don't know, I caught bits and pieces of it when I logged back in, but I'm mostly grinding on with my 100% world completion attempt, which one day I'll get there. I'm, like, 75% now, so nearly done. It's just a lot of the stuff I haven't done is the level 80 zones and stuff, and a lot of people have told me that on my own I'm really going to struggle to get through those areas.
Well, yeah, drop me a line, or really anybody in the Lincoln Force. I'm sure a lot of those guys that are still there would love to just run around with somebody and have fun.
Yeah, actually, when I jumped back on, it was the first time I got to do any of the world bosses, you know, the dragons. I grouped up, totally coincidentally, I logged in into, what's the area that's like a frozen, it's an iceberg with a city on it. Do you know the one I mean?
The
whole area is just like a giant iceberg. Or at least the loading screen looks like that.
My knowledge of Guild Wars 2 is, I know the zone you're talking about. I don't know the name of it off the top of my head. I want to say like Snowden, no, Frostgorge.
Yeah, sure. That sounds close.
I don't know what the rest of it is. I just know it's Frostgorge something.
Yeah. So I'd logged in that area, and it was literally as the dragon was about to spawn, all the events were kicking off, and I just was looking around. I was like, oh, shit's going down. And I started wandering around watching what people were doing, because I didn't really know what was going up. And then out of nowhere, like three giant Lincoln Force guild members turned up, coincidentally. And then I sort of tagged along with them, killed this dragon, and then we roamed about the world, because there's basically big groups of people would jump from place to place to follow all the rotations of the guild bosses, because it was just that they'd started doing the mega server stuff, and the rotations of the bosses were at fixed times. So we jumped around and did a few of those, and that was really, really awesome. I got some beautiful screenshots and stuff. Game's pretty.
It is a very pretty game.
Absolutely.
So, not to pull back from the tangent, but Ballard.
Bollard.
How did you get the name?
All right, so
kind of curious now.
Chub the World, something I had since I was 12, playing Habbo Hotel, which you've probably never heard of. It's like a chat room where you pay real money to get furniture. It was unbelievably stupid. So
like the first microtransaction, or like what's subscription based? How'd you pay real money to get?
You had to phone a premium rate number, and you would have to stay on the line for like 3 minutes, and then it would deposit the money into your account from the premium rate number.
I mean, like, ignoring the whole business practice of that, like, that is kind of brilliant still. But okay, so you're playing this game, and you're
playing this game, and I needed a username, and I was 12 or whatever, and at the time I was fascinated with the concept of chavs, which you obviously.
I know it's a British
outside
thing.
Outside of England, it's a British thing. Outside of England, it's not a massive word, but it's just generally, it stands for council houses and violence. It's just basically, you know, youths who get ASBOs, which is another word, you won't know what it means. It's like antisocial behavior orders. So I found that amusing, and I just came up with this really stupid username. And I've had it for years and years and years, and I've been meaning to change it, and I eventually got the excuse to when Twitch.tv ran a free name change competition, so you can't normally change your username on there, but they were offering like they'd give it out to like 10 people for every 100 retweets they got or something. So I retweeted this thing, won this competition, and they were like, you can have, you know, any name you want that isn't already taken. And Bollard is actually a contraction of my first name and my surname, so apart from sounding cool, because who doesn't like Bollards? It makes sense because it's, you know, related to my name. It was actually a nickname I had when I was younger as well. I thought I'd just try that out. And it was taken on Justin TV of all places by some idle account that had never been used. And they just let me take it even though it was already in use. They just took it off whoever the other person was, gave it to me, and then so that's why my username changed.
Very cool. Well, yeah, thank you for joining me today, Bollard.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. The main thing, there's a couple other topics we'll like get into with this, just like, you know, Twitch and just general programming back and forth. But the main thing was when I watch your streams occasionally, but I was watching Adam AK, another Vice City speedrunner, and he was like just playing around with a new glitch with Vice City. And to the best of my knowledge, up until this one, there was really only one other glitch, and that was like answering a phone next to a door teleports you to the center of an island or something to save 10 seconds.
You sort of got that right. Are you talking about the zip that you do at the bridge? Like you go through the gate in the bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of... that one works basically... you ride a bike up against the gate. And when you're riding the bike up against the gate, if you get off at the right time, it pushes you through the floor. And then the game, when you're underground, obviously it needs to spawn you somewhere that's above ground. It happens the nearest place that it wants to teleport you is on the other side of the gate. So it allows you to get through the gate without taking a phone call. And then you can take the phone call on the other side as you wish. But yeah, as for major glitches, Vice City has never really been, you know, like a speed game that has had insane game-breaking glitches. Like obviously the big one that got loads of news recently is Ocarina of Time. What with, is it Cosmo? I'm terrible at other speedruns.
Yeah, Cosmo Wright, I think is the guy's name.
Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah, so he really secured the most recent world record in that game of like something stupid like 18 minutes for a game that should take hours and hours and hours to beat. And that's because that game is broken as fuck. Like, you can just, there's a concept called wrong warp. It's basically you just allow yourself to skip to the end of the game or skip large chunks of the game. And also sequence break is another term that's used in speedrunning where you know, avoid whole sections of the game and skip to a bit later on by avoiding like trigger points effectively in the game. And Vice City's never been a game that's been that broken. There's a few little things like the gate zip, like you mentioned. Another really, really small glitch that saves like seconds over the run, but is really important, is the phone call glitch. So if you aim a gun whilst taking a phone call, you can sprint whilst taking the phone call. And that allows you obviously to save a bit of time because walking slowly would be far worse.
But
so
yeah,
the glitch that you saw.
The main thing with Vice City was like that has been really people honing it down from like 2 hours down to like an hour and a half, less than an hour and a half, is just like choosing when to get a helicopter over, you know, driving the car, or just like mm-hmm. weird things like messing with the AI routines and all that. But yeah, what's this big mystery glitch?
Yeah, so before, as you said, it was like grinding it down just by routing. So just, you know, as you said, one of the big things, we saved 30 seconds recently by taking a helicopter for a few missions. And that was like fucking huge at the time. Everyone was flipping their shit. But this new glitch allows us to break the game so hard that people have been having their game like crash all the time because it becomes really unstable. And just so many things go crazy when you do this glitch. So the idea behind it is, I'm probably going to talk way too long about this because for me it's really exciting, but basically some guy called Bastant2 on Reddit posted it just came up with this really weird idea. So on the PC version of GTA, which a lot of people might not know, there's a replay system. Were you aware of this?
I don't think so. I've only played it, like I've pretty much done like a completion of it and then like, you know, tried playing it again. It's like, no, this is a really cool game. I don't think I could speedrun this. And then, like, you know, happy with the purchase. But, okay, what is the replay system?
So, on consoles, it doesn't have it at all. It's a PC-only feature. And they added it in GTA 3. It basically means it constantly records your last 30 seconds of gameplay. And you can press F1 and it replays it. So it records all, like, your inputs and, you know, all the other stuff that goes on. Just plays it back in the in-game engine. And you can also save replays by pressing F2. And then replay them by pressing F3. And what this guy realized, the initial glitch he found was you are able to buy assets. So there are, to complete the game in Vice City, if you remember, you have to buy a certain number of assets, things like the strip club and the Sunshine Autos, a car show place. You have to buy a minimum of them. It's 6 that you need to be able to beat the game.
Well, yeah, like the game is, it's broken into two parts. There's the initial storyline with like the coke dealing drug lord that you like overthrow, and then after that you're the king of the town and you have to buy all the different places, and that was the main like mess up for a lot of speedrunners, is because a lot of that has RNG factors, like trying to find all those cars or the one where you in an ice cream truck or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're totally right, because we would refer to the beginning of the game as the linear section, because we had worked out like the perfect route effectively to take through that section of the game to be able to do it in about, what was the time? So people were doing in like 50 minutes approximately, was it, for that section until you killed Diaz?
I think it was, it was like 30 seconds for, or 30 minutes for dickheads or something. And then like, it's like, that's when things like, oh, we've used the helicopter at this time and you cut off 30 seconds from this already as fast as can be time. And that was where, exactly.
Yeah, that's where people got really excited originally. And then this guy, the second half of the game we called the non-linear section, because effectively you can kind of do the assets in almost any order. For a long time, there were two different routes that people used to take until it got narrowed down to, it was called the non-linear section, but everyone did the exact same thing, so it was actually kind of linear. But theoretically, like I've played around with a few different routes, and you can do it differently when you buy these assets and do these asset missions. And what this guy Bastant found is, you can buy these assets without actually spending money by using the replay system. And it basically involves, you can, for some really inane reason, if you're standing over a marker in the game, you can still interact with that marker in the replay. So you buy the asset during the replay, and it doesn't cost you any money because the game can't take money away from you because you don't have any money or something during the replay. And then you go back into the game and you now own the asset for free.
But do you also, like... Buying the asset was half the thing, but then getting all the, like, completing all the missions, is that what you mean by buying the, like, owning the asset?
No. So, buying the asset is just buying it. And the big thing about this was, have you heard of Cone Crazy? Obviously, if you've watched Anime K, yes. You must be aware of. Yeah, so Cone Crazy is a lot of the reason why many people hated the shit out of Running Vice City. Because it was this really stupid mini game you had to do over and over and over again. Like 9 times in a row you have to do it, getting your time quicker and quicker and quicker every time.
Well, because doing that time quicker and quicker doubles your reward. Like beating your personal best doubles your reward. And then like do that 10, 20 times and you have more money than you will ever need in the game. Like someone was actually able to do that game, like to break the amount of money you could have, and it resets by just like doing Cone Crazy to an insane amount, right?
Yeah, you can do it so many times that your money will overflow into negative numbers, and then you're fucked. But you can still do it.
Video games. Gotta love
exactly.
Them.
Yeah, no one thought anyone would try and do Cone Crazy. Like, I think you have to do it like 15 times in a row to get it to overflow or something stupid like that.
Oh, jeez.
No one thought you'd do that, so no one tested it, I guess. But yeah, that's the thing that happens. And that bit of the game, like, I remember when I would do speedruns, it would take me like, sometimes up to an hour or more to get a run past that mission. Just because you're trying to do it so fast. Like, basically, every time you try and improve your time by a second per round, it's like 9 seconds saved. So people got it like faster and faster and faster to the point where like it almost got crazily like impossible to do in a single segment run without having to just reset over and over again. So this glitch that this guy Bastan on Reddit came up with allowed us to skip Cone Crazy because we didn't need money anymore. Like, money not an issue. But what it turned out is that this glitch that Bastan found became like a Pandora's box for Vice City. It opened up. People went crazy glitch hunting. Like, there's a massive thread where we were all just trying, like, what else can we do with the replay? What else, like, what other markers can we stand in? People found that you can remotely buy assets from across the map and it will teleport you there instantly. Like, loads of crazy stupid shit was found. But none of that mattered once a guy... I've forgotten his name. I'm really unfortunately forgotten his name. But this other guy... discovered the glitch that you were talking about that Adam AK was practicing that has effectively blown the game wide open. And so the concept of this new glitch is we found in amongst all this playing around, people found that you can duplicate missions. So basically you can take a mission and then because rampages and phone calls and other things like that count as being on a mission, when the rampage or the phone call ends, it does the end mission trigger. And when that happens, it cancels like all of the stuff that would mean you were on a mission. You go back to normal gameplay. But if you somehow manage to take a rampage and a story mission at the same time, when the rampage ends, you are no longer in a mission, but you're also on a mission. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, are you still with me at the moment?
Okay, one more time. You are doing, like, you have a story mission and you do the rampage. You... replay the rampage and the rampage is finished and the story mission is finished, but also not finished?
Sort of, yeah, you're nearly there. So basically you go the way it worked out the way that we're using it in a run is you go somewhere and you record a replay of a rampage. Like you record a replay of you walking into the marker to start the rampage. It doesn't matter, you don't have to actually do the rampage, you just record standing in the marker. And then what you then go and do is you jump into the marker to start a mission. And there's a few split, like there's about 3 to 5 frames where if you play back the replay of you standing in the rampage marker, you can start the rampage and the story mission simultaneously. And so they're both going at the same time. So you're technically on 2 missions at once. And then you just have to wait out the timer on the rampage, fail the rampage, and then you're no longer on a mission. But actually the AI and the logic for the game is still playing out the story mission. And what this meant we could do is that it meant that we could take missions multiple times. And there's some really cool videos out there. I'd actually go recommend checking them out. I can link you to some later if you like, of people duping up missions. So do you remember the mission at the beginning of the game called Back Alley Brawl? It's one where you meet Lance for the first time. And you get the phone from the chef.
It's... The phone from the chef is a previous mission. This is the one where you first meet... the dickhead guy.
No, that's Guardian Angels. Back Alley Brawl is the one where you drive to the club and meet Kent Paul and then run over the chef, get the phone, and then you meet Lance and go and get in his car and drive to the gun shop.
Yeah, because you have to run away from the chef's buddies and then you run past Lance, get in the car before he can.
Exactly. Yeah. So that mission, people have duped that mission, and what happens is you get multiple Lances. And then you have multiple Lances of cars.
No.
Yeah, you exactly.
No.
So you can get more than one Lance. And like one of Lance's cars spawns on top of the other of Lance's cars, and then you can make them meet each other, but they won't both get in your car. And like all kinds of crazy shit goes on when you start duplicating missions and taking them multiple times.
So much Flash FM.
Yeah, so much Flash FM. So what we've managed to use this glitch to do is people have realized that... So you have to complete 6 assets. what we've discovered is there's nothing stopping you from just completing the same asset 6 times by duplicating the mission. And in fact, when you duplicate the mission, you only have to complete the mission once for it to count as completing 6 times, because it stacks up the counter. So basically, there's just a counter for how many assets you've done. And every time you complete one of these missions, it just goes up by 1. So by doing the same mission over and over again, it goes up by 6, and you just instantly have completed all the asset missions by doing one mission. And the glitch has been optimized to the point where you can fail the rampage instantly. So you just basically go in the mission, jump on the mission marker while starting the rampage, play the replay again and it fails the rampage, jump back in, just keep restarting the mission over and over and over again. And like, it's a bit complicated to follow all the steps that have got us here, but what this has meant is before we were getting excited when we saved 30 seconds, like really excited when we saved 30 seconds on the run, this glitch alone has saved, at this point, 20 minutes off of the previous world record.
And what was the previous world record? Like an hour?
So before the first glitch was found, the record was an hour and 25 something, like 25, 35, I think. And the world record that was set today is an hour and 2 minutes. So it's getting to the point where it could be sub 1 hour.
Yeah, like, so someone's going to break sub 1 hour. That is crazy.
Yeah. Maybe not within like the next week, but next 2 months, I'd say for sure someone will do sub 1 hour. Probably Phil, because Phil is a god. but yeah, it's been a really exciting time to be running Vice City, and the glitches. Like, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but maybe I could just regale you a story of how Printworks 2 plays out now that you've done this glitch.
Okay.
So you do this glitch and you stack up the mission 6 times. But what happens is it also stacks up everything that happens in the mission 6 times. So Printworks 2 is the one we're duplicating because you have to complete Printworks missions to be able to complete the game. So we might as well do one that we need to do anyway. And the Printworks 2 mission, I don't know if you remember it, it's the famous Get the Plates mission. If you've ever been in Adam's chat, if you've ever been in Adam's chat when he does this mission, people always take the piss out of him because one time he did the mission and he forgot the plates. So everyone in chat will be spamming, "Don't forget the plates."
Oh, jeez.
It's basically, yeah, exactly. It's basically a mission where a helicopter comes over and you have like ages, and there's a bunch of women with machine guns and shotguns and stuff that are defending this helicopter, and you have to get some counterfeit plates from a woman that comes out of the helicopter before she drives off with them, and then you just drive them back to Printworks 2.
Okay.
Ring any bells yet?
Not right now, but that's probably due to the fact that I'm sleep deprived.
That's
we'll chalk it up to that. I saw it, I'd be like, oh, all right, this mission. But yeah, it's...
You drive down to the docks and then back to Printworks again. I don't, you'll remember it if you saw it.
Yeah.
Especially if you watch one of the new runs. But so yeah, it's duplicating everything that happens in the mission. So
in that mission, now there are 6 helicopters in 1,000. Yep. Oh, geez.
Yeah, so in that mission, there are a row of 3 cars. That sit, and the woman gets in the middle one, and the 2 at the side are for you to get to chase her down. So there's this row of these 3 cars, and they spawn every time you do the mission. So you get 18 cars all in that one place, like smashed inside each other. Like some of them are literally so far inside each other that the hitboxes are destroyed completely, and you can walk through them. Like you can just walk inside the car. Some of them are falling through the floor. The women all duplicate up, and when they duplicate exactly on top of each other, their AI breaks, so they can't even move anymore. Like, some of them just stand there. Some of them get crumpled into tiny little packages. Like, their bodies just get squished completely. As you said, like, the helicopters get duped and crash into each other and, like, bounce through the floor and stuff.
The podcast, it's hard for me to convey this, but I'm, like, facepalming right now. And that's I have no words for the thing you're describing.
It's actually beautiful. I mean, my favorite part of this glitch is the, for some reason, all of the streetlights break. There's
what?
No explanation for it, but all of the streetlights, normally they're meant to be like yellowy white, and all of them start turning into disco lights. So when you drive past them, they flash like red and blue as you go past. There's like alternating crazy colors. The game just stops making any sense whatsoever. And it's probably really, really close to crashing at any given point. So yeah, the new glitch is cool. It's definitely worth a watch if you want to see Vice City broken in the most offensive way possible.
And you are streaming some of these runs, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in a topic we'll probably get on into a minute, I've migrated from Twitch at the moment. I'm checking out Hitbox.
Okay. I was going to say, we'll get to the shameless plugs at the end then, I guess.
Yeah, we can save this for later.
All right. Was there anything else like crazy with Vice City that you wanted? Well, I'm sure there's a lot you'd want to talk about, but...
Oh, yeah, I could go on for hours. There's so many things. Like, there's other glitches that we found in between that I've skipped over. But the main thing is just how crazy it's been over the past... It's probably only been 2 weeks. It feels like it's been months. Of just the route has changed completely and the run has become so much quicker. It's gotten to the point where so many people are alienated by the new glitches now that people don't want to run any percent anymore. People like, it's like, these glitches are too broken. I don't want to do this anymore. This isn't skill anymore.
This is not the game I fell in love with. Game. Well, yeah, and that is an interesting thing where, like, my favorite type of speedrun is the Mirror's Edge kind, where it's, like, you're having to constantly just keep, like, doing these mini glitches over and over and sort of compounding, and then occasionally there's, you know, breaking through walls and stuff. The Ocarina of Time one is mind-blowing as it is. Like, that's not really as appealing after the first time watching it, I guess. Or the first dozen times. I've really enjoyed the VTA, or Vice City speedrunning, just because of the whole, like, you know, minute little bits, changing helicopters, and but yeah, it's, I don't know, I'm interested in seeing it.
It's kind of sad in a way. Like, it's amazing to watch and really fun to get huge PBs just because of an insane glitch. But yeah, it's also a little sad. I mean, I'm a massive fan of glitch speedruns. Like, if you haven't seen the glitch Pokemon Gold speedrun, that is unbelievable just how broken games can get sometimes. But yeah, it is also sad. Like, one thing that's become a result of this new glitch is there's basically a section of the speedrun where you literally stand still for 3 minutes and don't touch the mouse or keyboard, because it's faster to stand still for 3 minutes than to actually play the game. And I think that's partially a lot of the reason why people have been turned off by the new strats.
I feel like that needs to be, like, turned into a challenge in itself. Like, how, like, call that the sandwich glitch, where you have to eat a sandwich within the 3 minutes time or something.
Yeah. That's toilet break time. That's what that is.
Or just something like people could still see on the webcam, but yeah.
True. Oh, they can watch me pee on the webcam, I guess. I don't have a webcam yet.
I don't know. It's okay. We should... maybe on Hitbox, the Wild West, could you...
Yeah.
Have a P cam set up, but I don't know if on Twitch. I don't know now that they're big timing it.
I think that part of the run would get muted, probably.
Yeah, someone has the copyright on that sound. Yeah, this seems like a good transition as any. Like, what are your thoughts, especially as a speedrunner, on all the stuff that Twitch has done? Better or worse, they've gone with these decisions.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not unrealistic in my expectations of Twitch. Like, I understand why they've implemented the changes, particularly the I'm talking about the music muting changes. Like, totally makes sense. YouTube has the same thing. I
understand the reason why they've done that to a degree. Like, oh, if you have a program that detects it's this song is what you think is playing right now, why not only mute it to that length of that song if you know that it's that song?
That's what I was coming on to. I understand why. The implementation is so abhorrent that I've actually, just for the time being, I'm taking a break from Twitch. I'm checking out other people. I think it's time we spent some time apart. You know what I mean? It's kind of shitty.
That, like, Twitch really is the only game in town right now, especially with the loss of Justin TV, which was owned by the same company. But, like, yeah, Ustream was kind of a joke, and it's healthy to get competition in there. So, like, best of luck to Hitbox, and I don't really wish any ill on Twitch. I mean, they are still trying to, like, show that it's, like, it's just us right now sort of thing. We're just, like, this, you know, small handful of people.
Yeah. I mean, so, as we said, like, they obviously could have gone about it better. if you look at what YouTube have done, YouTube, you know, their system is just so much better. Obviously, they've got like infinitely more money being backed by Google than Twitch have at the moment to kind of implement this kind of system. But
It's that system also has its flaws. I've said this on a previous episode, but basically, that my one issue with that system is, like, let's say someone, like, you know, anybody makes a copyright claim against you, they start getting those ad revenue dollars up until you can prove that it is your they are bogus with their copyright claim and it's your creative stuff, and you do not retroactively get money for it. You just start getting money again.
For people who rely on that kind of stuff for their income, I can totally see how that's like hugely shitty. But I don't care. Like, I've never wanted to monetize anything I've done on the internet. I do it entirely for fun. If you want to put adverts on my videos, whatever, that's fine. Like, the thing I appreciate about YouTube is I can click a button that just says, yes, these are all copyright things. I don't give a shit. Leave my video on there for people to see. If people in Germany can't see it, I'm sorry, Germany.
Yeah, and that is a nice thing where it's, you know, rather than having to try and approach some music companies like, hey, can I use your song for a thing? It's just instead, you guys just going to get money for it automatically. And no one gets mad for me making this thing. So that is a very cool thing that this is possible now in this age.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a perfect solution, but it's an acceptable one.
It is the best solution we can get right now. Point. Yeah.
Yeah. Until someone realizes that copyright law is complete bullshit. The Twitch stuff, the Twitch stuff is shitty. Like the 2-hour VOD stuff as well is kind of a joke for anyone who's actually planning on ever speedrunning an RPG. But I sent an email. They on their Twitter account, they were like, if you have feedback about our changes, please send us an email. And I'm really surprised. I actually got a reply from a human being, to the email I wrote to them. They did mention that they're planning on removing the 2-hour limit again in the future. And, you know, obviously the video muting stuff isn't final. But one thing I do want to highlight about the current implementation, about just how stupid it really is. Like, obviously people have seen, you know, Twitch's own VODs got muted because that's hilarious.
Yes, that was the funniest bit.
Yep. And the fact that it covers video game music, so even if you're listening for in-game music and not just playing your iTunes library over the internet, you're still fucked. That's also kind of amusing.
No, the best part was the NecroDancer one, because their soundtrack isn't finished yet or available like to anybody, like any copyright companies to then start searching for. And it's like, how are you getting, like, how are you detecting this music? We haven't finished it yet.
Yeah, the system also is clearly not working. People have had stuff that doesn't even have music, you know, completely blocked. Like, Vice City speedrunners started listening to only KChat and VCPR so that it wouldn't get muted, and then their VODs still got muted anyway.
Oh, jeez.
So yeah, the system's shitty. But my favorite thing about just how shitty the system is that they mute your VOD completely and utterly. Like, even if you upload it to YouTube, I've noticed it's still muted. And then they say, here's a button where you can appeal any copyright claims against the music in your video, which you can no longer hear. You can't tell if, you know, they actually have any right to mute your video, because you can't listen to it and actually check if there was any music at that point. You have to literally memorize every single minute that you played every single song in your video if you want to have any hope of actually being able to dispute their claim against your video. Like, at least YouTube, they will open up the video, show you the exact point the song starts and finishes that they think is copyrighted, give you the name of it, and let you listen to it, even if the output video has to be muted for it to be, you know, ad-free and showable in every region.
Yeah, that is catch-22-ish. I need to set up my hard drive again since moving my PC, but I would do local recordings of my Twitch stuff as well.
Yes.
But yeah, not everyone is as crazy as I am, so...
I started doing local recordings when I had one of my personal bests. The Twitch stream went down halfway through the run.
Had a picnic. That's a bummer.
Yeah, I was still, luckily they still accept split runs as long as the time is visible in both halves and, you know, they can work it out. But that made me more cautious, and now I record locally all of my, just in case. But yeah, as a result of this whole thing, I'm checking out Hitbox, and, you know, Hitbox is actually kind of cool. Not only have I had like an increase in viewership somehow, despite Hitbox being far less popular than Twitch,
Well, I could theorize why that is. Probably because there is, I mean, like, just raw numbers between the two, there are, like, you know, less streamers than there are on Hitbox than there are on Twitch. And so to a person just randomly looking for a stream, he's more likely to see you just by, like, sheer percent.
Yeah, like, my second stream got front page on Hitbox. Like, I had somehow had more than 30 viewers, and, like, that's all you need to get front page profile on Hitbox because of the low viewer numbers. And the things I really like about it, though, are the something you don't really realize until you stream somewhere other than Twitch, the stream delay. It is scarily small. Like, I will say things that people will reply to within 2 seconds in chat.
Wow.
And having that kind of interaction with your chat is frightening at first. Like, I'm so conditioned to Twitch's 30-second wait before I get a response to what I said.
I vaguely remember, like, Twitch at one point in time being, like, that fast, and then they went to, like, a huge 30-second delay, and then they've toned it back down since then. But,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. It's a scary thing. I can agree.
Yeah. It's really impressive. Also, because they have, as you said, so many fewer streamers, if you go watch someone with, like, one view or something, there's no lag or anything. Like, if I were to go watch often a Vice City stream on Twitch, if they are streaming at, like, 720 or 1080p, even with a perfect connection my end, sometimes the servers at Twitch's end, you know, choke because no one's viewing the stream. Why should they bother providing a stable bandwidth for it? Like, it costs them too much. But on Hitbox, it does seem a lot more reliable for the smaller streams. And finally, their players HTML5, so it doesn't choke your CPU usage as well, like Twitch does.
Very cool.
That, and I got raided by Adam one time and got like 150 viewers, which was hilarious. And then the next day, one of the Hitbox staff came in my chat and started chatting to me, obviously because I had like crazy viewers the night before. He wanted to see what it was about.
Yeah, that's one of the like the chat and the whole like, community around live streaming. I'll say that instead of Twitch, but like the idea of raiding. Going to be like if hopefully the changes Twitch makes to like the highlighting and the restriction of like limited hours doesn't deter those guys because like that is a neat thing that like I think is more or less only with speedrunners. I guess some live streamers I've heard them do raids on each other as well, but I only associate that with speedrunners just raiding each other.
Yeah, it's definitely a big speedrunning thing. The speedrun community is really good at wanting to showcase other talent, I suppose, if you want to put it like that.
It's healthy. It's really good healthy competition.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the speedrunning community is one of the least volatile communities. Obviously, like when you get, if you want to have an argument about, you know, what category a game, like a certain thing should be because it has a glitch in it or something, like speedrunners will get down your throat about that, but they don't give a shit who's getting views. Like, if like most of the time they're really good about, you know, being good to their fellow streamers and stuff. It's cool.
Very cool. I guess yeah, there's just one other topic I wanted to pull your brain about, but like I've begun getting into programming in general, and I know you have dabbled a bit into that and done some. Have you only done one game jam, or like what got you down this road?
Oh gosh, that's a good question. So, I mean, I've always been super into computers. I did A-level computing. That was my first, you know, first time I really got my hand stuck into programming. But game development came to me like as soon as I realized, you know. I like computers. I like video games. Holy shit, there's probably a career in this. That's kind of what I've been doing. Like, I'm currently studying computing at university now, learning more about programming as much as I can. And even at the moment, I'm currently doing an internship in Cambridge at Frontier Developments, getting some experience in the game industry, which is really cool. That's kind of just been, you know, what I've been trying to funnel towards my career, and that's why I've done, you know, some Ludum Dares. That's what I've done in the past when it comes to game jams. Yeah.
Very cool. I don't really, like, I don't know what to ask, only because I don't know what your knowledge is of, like, do you want to talk about maybe some of the, like, you know, silly things you've made that's like prototypes, games?
Yeah, have you ever, I can do.
I don't think you've ever made anything commercially available for people to see, but like, just what was some of the dumb stuff you've enjoyed making?
Yeah, I mean, why don't I talk about my first game? That's always a good place to start.
Yeah.
First game I ever made. Yeah, it's usually where you start for most stories. The first game I made was in Python, of all stupid languages to try and make a game in. By the way, Python, not a great language to make a game in. But it was the only language I knew at the time. It was when I was learning for A-level. And over the summer, in between like my 2 years of A-levels in England, I started picking up this game. And what I was trying to make was, I basically started off trying to make StarCraft. I was like, I'm going to make 2D StarCraft, because that would be really cool. Apparently that is a really stupid project to take on for your first ever game, because StarCraft is a hard game to make. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty tough. RTSs.
Yeah, so I ended up, it sort of morphed as I made it into this really weird, it was basically not a tower defense game, but a sort of a survival game. So that you basically would pick one of the three races in StarCraft. You could play Protoss, Terran, or Zerg. And then you'd have to defend your three production buildings from oncoming waves of enemy units. So, like, you could play, like, Terran against Zerg, Terran against Protoss, etc., etc. And so you could have the production buildings. Every time you killed a unit, you got minerals that you could use to make more units to defend against the next coming wave. And it got really in-depth, and I think the only reason I actually finished the damn thing is because there was a competition. Have you heard of Raspberry Pi?
No, that sounds like a meal.
So Raspberry Pi is this little credit card-sized computer.
Yeah, okay. It's like an Arduino.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a cheaper Arduino.
I heard Ralph's Berry Pi, and I was like, what? Just, what? I'm tired. I'm sleep-deprived. Chalking up to that. So yeah, Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi. So there was a competition submit. Basically, it was an under-18 programming competition. It was a submit a program that runs on the Raspberry Pi, and you could win some money. So I submitted my game to that. I managed to somehow squeeze my game that was horribly, horribly unoptimized onto a Raspberry Pi and get it running. And it came runner-up in that competition. I won like 125 quid or something ridiculous. I was like, holy shit, that was really cool. And yeah, that was a really good experience, actually, getting to finish that game. And I spent a lot of time on it over the summer. What about yourself? What have you been dabbling with recently?
Well, I guess starting with the beginning, I've taken some classes in high school and then university. I did a couple years in university, just like of C++, just like that general language intro. And to anybody listening who it's the languages are different, but they're really the same.
Yes, absolutely. That's like one of the first things you need to learn about programming is like, once you learn the basics of one language, you can pretty much pick up any other language you like.
Like what I've been dabbling with so far has more or less still just been like a bunch of if else statements and like occasionally whiles and some loops and all that. But it's getting the job done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there anything beyond that, or is programming just a bunch of smoke and mirrors?
So there's different paradigms, they're called, of programming.
Oh, okay.
So the one that you're going to be familiar with is procedural. Like, you have an order of instructions. So, like, you do execute this command, execute this command, execute this command. And then maybe you have, like, an if, which is like a branch. And you can do this command or this command. But it's still kind of, like, linear.
Yeah.
You get into different paradigms. Like, obviously, C++, you've probably heard the term object-orientated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically it's not really a different type of programming. It's a way of structuring your code. So you group like similar things into objects that have methods that describe what they do and member variables that describe what they are, like their properties. And then when you start really getting out there, you get into things like logic programming languages and functional programming languages. And those kind of things can be like functional programming languages. Haskell is one that my university taught in the first year, is very mathematical based. So everything is a function. Like you have mathematical, essentially mathematical functions. They don't have side effects. They you give them an input and they always give the same output.
I feel like a good example, like I don't know, I haven't actually looked at their code or like understood it, but I feel like the No Man's Sky is a good example of like function based programming, because like the way they've been able to cheat like going to a planet and having the whole thing load is because it is all just one big math output.
Yeah, yeah. That's an example of them using functions to generate a world. They probably didn't use a functional language. I could be wrong. They could be using Haskell for all I know, or F or something stupid. But yeah, that's a relatively good comparison. Logic programming languages are really fucking weird. Like, you define everything in terms of logical semantics. So it's like, oh, I don't even know where to begin to describe logic. Basically, my lecturer for my logic course was absolutely insane. He's the most insane person I've ever met in my entire life.
I probably won't get to logic for a couple years, so it's okay. Yeah. Really, I have a joke game that I've been like making called I think it's Return to Archer Mountain 2.
That's a cool name for your first game.
Well, yeah, it's the same joke as what was it, Mel Brooks' History of the World Part 2, because there is no Part 1. But yeah, it's just like, it's a bullet hell, and it's whatever I need it to be. It's like, oh, let's see if I can learn how to change, like, you know, have rooms adjust or have moving screens or have, you know, collision with stuff. And you know, it's been a fun little thing I've been playing around with. I have another idea that I'm actually stealing from Dave Lang, but that is still trying to.
Is it Windjammers?
No, it is not Windjammers.
Damn.
I could do a hot reveal on it right now, but I won't. I don't know. I'll tell you.
Maybe you should save that for after the show.
I've not even planned on making money off it, but yeah. It's something I want to try making. It's a neat thing to try making stuff, but
yeah,
I'm racking my brain on the dumbest stuff that you, I think you said you were, at one point in time on Rack Your Brain as well, of just like, you have gravity, but you need the gravity not to work when you're on a ladder, but every other time it needs to work. And
it's good fun. Not only is programming good fun, but when you combine it with actually making games, you're doing something creative and also problem solving at the same time. And it's like, I don't know, it's like doing Sudoku, but at the end, you get like a cool piece of work that you can show to other people.
Well, and more than
them actually care about.
More than just a cool piece of work, I'm curious if you, like, I've had this thing, and I've heard it described by other people as tech joy, which is like the feeling like you, like some endorphin release or something when you're like 80% done with something and you've not quite started and you're not quite finished, but it's sort of like this middle ground where like everything is coming together and it's just this awesome feeling. Have you ever?
And then you enter that last 20% and then everything's fucked.
Yes. Then you're just like looking through or like, where's the semicolon that like I didn't put in right. And I hate that.
No, part. I totally know what you mean. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really cool experience when you see what you're working on come together. I mean, have you considered doing... I mean, this weekend is Ludum Dare talking about game jams. Have you thought about dabbling in a game jam as of yet?
I've thought about dabbling in a game... sleep-deprived, chalking up to that. A game jam. But really, I didn't realize Ludum Dare was this early on. I feel like a game jam would be a neat thing to like work with someone else on, but then I don't feel if I am up to par to be a reliable source for that other person. And so I want to, you know, learn more of just how to use a really easy program like Game Maker to then make something dumb and silly.
Well, yeah, I mean, two things. One, you can totally work on your own in a game jam. In fact, it's the main category, the actual jam, no, not the jam, the compo, is a single person entry where you have to make all the art assets, music, code, everything yourself. But you're totally cool to also use, you know, any engine you want. You can use Unity, you can use Game Maker. There's nothing stopping you from using what you know already to make a cool game in those 48 hours. And Ludum Dare's 3 times a year, so don't worry about missing this one if you don't want to check it out. But I think doing a game jam is possibly the best thing you can do to, you know, improve as not just a programmer, but like a game programmer. Because not only do you force yourself to finish something, which is often something that's really hard to do when you're working on a project in your spare time, because you just get the, you know, the feature creep. You get the, you keep on tacking on bits, you keep on putting things off that you don't really want to do. In a game jam, you have 48 hours and you don't have time to put things off. You have to do it now or don't do it ever. But also, you get feedback from other people, and that's really key. Like, no matter what you make, someone will play it, and someone will leave you a comment and rate your game, as long as you rate other people's games, that is. And that kind of feedback is actually really, really helpful and really, really validating as well.
All right, well, no promises, but I will definitely look into trying Ludum Dare this this weekend?
Yeah, there's one this weekend, I believe. I can send you the link after the podcast, but I can't take part this weekend. I'm really sad. I am seeing family this weekend, so I've messed up there. But I will probably do the Christmas one. I usually always do the Christmas one, and I also stream that out. Last year, I got a bunch of people together at my university, and we did like a little stream from our university campus of us all making some games together.
Yeah, like that is probably has been like the most beneficial thing for me. Was just like I've only done it like once, maybe. I think I did, yeah, I only done it once, but just live streaming myself programming, because it felt like no one was watching because no one was in the chat, but apparently someone was, you. But it's just like with the idea of the camera and the idea of like, it's, this is something that's being recorded. I need to keep just like keep the engine going. And yeah, it's a neat thing. People should look into programming, making stuff. Yeah.
I mean, the British government has finally realized just how important programming is, and they're trying to make it, you know, a bigger part of the curriculum, because the current ICT courses that they have in schools are kind of garbage, to be honest. Like, they teach you how to, you know, make a spreadsheet and use Excel, but given how much like kids are surrounded by technology and computers nowadays anyway, that kind of stuff is irrelevant at this point. Like, who really needs to be taught that? I think with people becoming more computer literate, to use a term that I really hate, to actually like learn to write code, it's really cool, because not only is it a huge industry to get into, it's also a really good way to, you know, get thinking.
Well, and
think more logically.
Not to throw dark at the end of this show, but a guy who actually lives in England, who, like, his YouTube is called CGP Grey. I don't think he's ever given out his real name to the public, but he puts out all these like educational videos, like, oh, it's, you know, how, what are the different monarchies? How is the U.S. made? And like, it's bunch of new things like that. His latest one was basically, you know, sort of like, you know, showing light of the fact that technology is advancing pretty well. It's the fact that, like, you know, we have self-driving cars are a thing that is like still in laboratories, but very much something that could very easily become a commercial product for people and then put a lot of people out of jobs. And basically pointing out that, like, there are in these coming years, there is potential for a lot of people to be out of work and need, and the few jobs that the computers won't be taking is stuff like computer programming. And so, yeah, it's really nice to hear that, like, schools and governments are investing in the youth in the proper direction. I'm not saying that's going to be a future that's going to happen, but it's computer programming is good to be taught.
Yeah, and it's really good to know basics, because it just helps you be more proactive with computers, I suppose. You can get a lot more done, like, even just things like writing little scripts and stuff to help yourself do stuff on the computer can be really helpful as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny seeing how Minecraft has actually been one of the things that has really helped people get into programming more. Because, like, it's a great way to get kids interested in programming when you say, hey, you know that house that you spent 3 days building in Minecraft? What if you could write a script that does it in 10 seconds?
Cool. You mean like with the mods that have those building turtles? Yeah, I remember.
You've got the building turtles, like the logo turtle, which is something that has been around for years and years and years, teaching people the basics of, you know, simple programming and stuff. But even you can actually just like pipe basically, you know, JavaScript or whatever straight into Minecraft, like on a Raspberry Pi or whatever, and just have it, like, you can just type coordinates in and just spawn blocks at different coordinates.
Even more than that is just, like, redstone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that too. Basic logic circuitry as well.
But yeah, we actually I ended up grilling Squiddle about that on the previous episode, depending how I edit this, or maybe a future episode. But really, I think it's a good time to wrap up here, unless there's anything you want to talk about, sir.
No, that seems good to me. Thanks again for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. It was nice to talk to you, and I was great for you to tell me all the craziness of Vice City and all the other stuff, your opinion on other things. I appreciate it.
Hope I didn't go on too long about Vice City.
This is you know, be one of the shortest episodes we've ever done, so it's no problem. I think we got awesome. Sub 1 hour.
More or less, yeah, I think so.
Any plugs you'd like to give out? Possibly a Hitbox or Twitch?
Yeah, sure. I'll shamelessly plug myself. Yeah, so as I said, I'm streaming on Hitbox mostly at the moment. That's hitbox.com/bollard. If you want to see some Vice City speedruns, check me out there. Or, you know, there's plenty of other great speedrunners on Twitch and so on as well. And my Twitch account's bollard as well. Just twitch.tv/bollard. Might stream some programming at some point too.
Actually, this is, you know, listeners probably don't want to care too much about this, but I am curious. I recently signed up to commit to the Extra Life 25 hour stream at the end of October. Mm-hmm. You did that last year, right?
I did not do Extra Life. I've been doing the Giant Bomb community endurance runs. I've done the...
Oh, that's what I saw you
do. Did I do all three or did I do one and three? I can't remember. We did three last year and we raised nearly $5,000 total. Our last event raised over $2,500 on its own, which was insane. And I did a really stupidly long Call of Duty stream on that one. I played COD 4 on Veteran for 11 hours straight.
Oh, jeez. Just that, like,
I completed every single mission. Every single mission, including Mile High Club. Mile High Club took me 20 minutes. I was so proud.
The one part of Call of Duty, if it's the Call of Duty I'm thinking of, which I believe it is, there's like the part near the end, right before, I guess, really old game spoilers, Ghost gets killed. But you're just having to run down a hill from, like, the, you know, house in the middle of the woods that you've, like, gotten the data from. And for some reason, getting mortared. And I wanted to do Veteran the entire way through on my first playthrough of that. And I just, like, kept dying to just random mortars and just the dumbest things for, like, a good hour. And I was just like, I admit defeat. I'll go down to recruit or something. And then, like, spend another 10 minutes before I got to the very end. And then the cutscene happens where you just die right there. And I'm like, table. I just flipped the table and was done. I've been burnt on Call of Duty ever since.
I believe that's Modern Warfare 2, but yes, that is a really shitty part of that game. Oh, gosh.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Any other plugs we'll have in the show notes, you guys. We never know how to end these.
Peace.